The forbidden relations that the Torah describes present a formidable challenge for people because the nature of people is to be attracted to these things. And as Rashi illustrates, the Torah wants to show us how much assistance we need to be able to stand up to the temptation and how severe it is, God forbid, to those who succumb. Parashas Arayas Shabsei Parashasen Mistayemes Betziboi, the conclusion of the laws against the forbidden relations in our parasha, includes these words, Ushmartemes Mishmarti, that you should guard my requirements, the vilti ases v'chukoi sate a voice, gomer, that you shouldn't do any of these despicable things, v'loisi tamu bohem ani Hashem elokechem, you should not be contaminated by them, I am Hashem, your God. It's those three words that we're going to focus on. Ovepirush ala pasuk, hetik Rashi divrei hakosuf. So Rashi quotes the words of the pasuk and says, v'loisi tamu bohem, you shouldn't become impure through this behavior, ani Hashem elokechem, I am Hashem, your God. Says Rashi, from this we can deduce, ovepirush, ha'im titamu, if a person does allow themselves to be contaminated by these relations, then ani elokechem, Hashem says, I will no longer be, so to speak, your God. V'atem nifsalem nifsonim me'acharai, and you'll be cut off from me, or disqualified from me. And Abisha says, what pleasure could I possibly derive from you? When, God forbid, you deserve to be eradicated. Therefore, says Rashi, the Torah says these words, I am Hashem, your God. So, why does Rashi have to explain this? It's not the first time we've seen the expression, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. And the first question we should ask is, how come Rashi here is not using the explanation he gave previously in Parashas Vayira, where he says, Ani Hashem means nemanli porachule, I am Hashem who is reliable or trustworthy, that I will take or bring consequences to a person, and ani Hashem neman liten schar, as well as I am Hashem who is reliable to reward people. Especially when you consider that then Parashas Vayira, when Rashi gave these interpretations, he said that is the common way of explaining ani Hashem. So the commentaries point out, why doesn't Rashi use that same explanation here? Because that message has already been conveyed earlier in the parasha, where the expression Ani Hashem was used, and there it was indicating that Hashem is the one who will mete out consequences or give rewards. So it's illogical that the Torah would then repeat the same message. And therefore we have to interpret that here, I am Hashem, your God, must be telling us something else. And the question is, what says Rashi, that Hashem will, so to speak, push us away in a sense? So we understand why Rashi is giving a different explanation, but the explanation itself needs insight. The way that Rashi has explained the words Ani Hashem Elokeichem really needs some insight. At face value, when you read those words, which is, do not contaminate yourself with these behaviors, and then I am Hashem, your God. All we could really derive from this is, using the principle that when the Torah presents a positive message, you can extrapolate the negative message. The fact that Hashem says, if you avoid these behaviors, then I will be your God. Okay, so the implication is, and if you, God forbid, don't avoid these behaviors, Hashem might reject you. Where does Rashi get the insight from for all the other details that he includes in his interpretation, which is that you'll be cut off from me or disqualified, and that what pleasure should I derive from you, and that people deserve to be removed? Now you'd say, well, Rashi's saying it because this is the explanation given in Teras Kehanim. Ava commotion is bor beover kama peomim, except that the Rebbe has taught us numerous times that ainin yonash Rashi befirush al hatel lahatik doshas chazal uvela shaynon, that Rashi's normal way of interpreting psukim is not just to wholesale import the language of midrashim, and certainly not verbatim. Of afrach lekos of kan Rashi isa b'Teras Kehanim b'chiyotze b'zeh, especially as Rashi doesn't make any reference to Teras Kehanim in this particular interpretation. When we say mochach, which indicates to us she Rashi noiket shapirus zehu pshuto yishal mikra, Rashi is taking a position that these three elements that he has shared as his interpretation, this being cut off from Hashem, and Hashem has no pleasure, and chas v'shalom kloya, they're actually derived from the simple understanding of the psukim. In other words, those words, do not defile yourselves with these behaviors, I am Hashem, your God, those words, melamed es kol shleishos ha'pratim, they are the words that give us the insight into these three aspects. Atem nifsolim me'acharai, o mahanoi yesh li b'chem, v'atem ischayvim kloya, those three levels or degrees of separation or punishment from Hashem are clearly contained in the pshat of these words, and we have to work out, v'tomua, minayin ha'hechach b'pshut ha'shomikri li pratim eilu, where do you see them in these words, and how did Rashi find them? Vein loy mashut sach rashi oy kol ponim hoy beritzoy noy le fayt avur ben khamesh le mikra es mashmoy sa kol shel eni ale kechem. So maybe you'd want to argue, well, Rashi's speaking to a young audience, it's the 5-year-old who's learning Chumash, and therefore he has to spell out what it means when Hashem says, I won't be Chas V'Shalom your God. Well, Rashi wouldn't need to explain that to us because he's already done so earlier. So there we see Hashem saying to Avram Avinu that I'm going to give you the land of Canaan and I will be your God, Pirish Rashi. And there immediately Rashi says, but if a person chooses to live outside of Eretz Yisrael, he is Kamisha in Releka. That person is considered as if he has no God. And there Rashi didn't feel compelled to explain to the 5-year-old what that means, that you have no God. And he certainly didn't add any further details. So if that was a good enough explanation there to assume the child understands what it means that Hashem is Chas V'Shalom, no longer our God, surely it should be sufficient over here. That can't be the reason Rashi's adding these three details. Must be that these three details are actually in the simple understanding of the Pasuk, and we have to understand where and how we get to that understanding. Also, Gamen movement by Yisof as Rashi Besim Pirushoi, another thing about what Rashi says that doesn't seem clear is Lekach Nemar Hashem Elokeichem. After he tells us the three steps of distance between us and Hashem, Chas V'Shalom, if we succumb to these behaviors, so then he says, therefore it says, I am Hashem your God. What's Rashi just added to our insight? And why does Rashi say it in a word that sounds almost like he's answering a question we would have had? Lekach nemar, therefore it had to say. That implies that you're wondering why it had to say. Well, who raised that question? And lastly, Yaseir Mizoi, Mascholis Pirush Rashi, when you go back to the beginning of Rashi's commentary, Shehetik Menakosav Eloisi Tamu Bohem Ani Hashem Elokechem, he didn't only use as his heading the words, I am Hashem your God, and then the implication, and if you don't listen, the opposite will happen. But he also included the words, Veloisi Tamu Bohem, do not defile yourselves through these behaviors. Mashma Shakoshikanu Gamba Divir Akosav Eloisi Tamu Bohem, that implies that Rashi is concerned about how we might misunderstand those words, that you shouldn't become defiled. But then later on in his commentary, he doesn't really unpack what Veloisi Tamu Bohem is. So he brings it as the headline and does really only seems to interpret Ani Hashem Elokeichem. So we need to understand that. And in order to do so, let's create context because this is the end of the story of the forbidden relations. Let's go back to something Rashi said at the beginning of the section. Let's see what Rashi pointed out to us at the beginning of the section about prohibited relations. There too, the Pasuk said, Moshe, speak to the Jewish people, tell them, I am Hashem your God, and therefore don't do these certain things. Shapirish, there Rashi gives two interpretations. For now, we're going to focus on the second. A little bit later, we'll come back to the first. So, Bipirusha Hasheni, the second interpretation of Ani Hashem Elokeichem, he says is Rebbe Oimer. The Rabbi Yehuda Anasi said, Golovi Adulafonov Shesefion and Natek Ba'aroyois. They knew that there was going to come a time at the second Beis Hamikdash where people would reject these laws of forbidden relations. And therefore, he includes over here this decree, I am Hashem your God, de'u mi gozer aleichem, that you should remember who's making these rules, who's decreeing this behavior. Dayan lihipora, that I am a judge who can mete out consequences, ve'neman l'shalim schar, as well as pay rewards. Now, what's unusual about what Rashi says over there is it pretty much sounds like he's saying the same thing in two different ways. Du'umi goyzer aleichem, know who is giving these decrees. And know that I am the one who can mete out consequences and pay you rewards. It actually sounds like it's two completely different interpretations of Ani Hashem Elokeichem. And we could prove it because there are many places where Rashi takes those words Ani Hashem and interprets them to mean that you can rely on the Eibishter to punish or you could rely on the Eibishter to reward. And in those places, Rashi doesn't first tell us, know who's giving the instruction. That implies that the message, know who's giving the instruction, and the message that Hashem is reliable to reward and punish are not the same message. And we can see that also in the reverse. There are a variety of places where Rashi takes those words Ani Hashem and explains them to me. I have imposed a decree on you, and you do not have the option to be able to you know, step away and not take you know, not take this responsibility. Oidami gozar adav aval yekal beinecha. Or Rashi says, know who it is that decreed this thing, and therefore don't take it lightly. And there Rashi doesn't tell us anything about and know that I could punish a reward or something like that. Sefim Kain, if that's the case, if ordinarily Rashi picks only one of these two interpretations, what prompts Rashi to say in this particular case, as the introduction to the laws of prohibited relations, has a dual meaning. First, it means you need to know who's making these rules, and then that you also have to know that they was just capacity for reward and punishment. So in order to understand that, which in turn will help us understand what Rashi is saying at the end of the story of the Aroyas, is let's pay attention to how the Torah introduced the laws of forbidden relations. V'habir bozet. So the explanation hinges on this. B'shat parsha Aroyas matzuna dova miyuchod, we find something very unusual about the section about prohibited relationships. Shebeterem ischila kosel afarish es proteho yisurim. Before the Torah gets into the details, these are the actual lists of relations that you may not engage in. Nemrak Doma Klolis, the Torah does something unusual and gives a very overarching introduction. Hakeleles kame v'chame inyonim, and that introduction incorporates various things. First, it says, Kamais Eretz Mitzrayim Goymer, don't behave like the Egyptians. Then Eretz Knan Goymer, don't behave like the Canaanites. Then Loisasu Goymer, don't do the things that they did. Then Es Mishpotai Tasu Goymer, then the Eibush just says, do my rules. Oshmartem Es Chukois Goymer, and observe or guard. Machuk. Many, many different elements. V'apsicha le'agdoma klolis zoihi. So that overarching, essentially the principles of all of Judaism, don't behave like the non-Jews and don't transgress Hashem's laws and follow the statutes. So that's this very generalized introduction. And what does that start with? V'aydab Hashem gomer, dabal ibnei Yisrael gomer, ani Hashem rekechem. All of that is introduced by Hashem saying, I'm Hashem your God. So, let's first address why does the Torah give us this broad introduction to the laws of forbidden relations? So long and detailed, the Parsha Aroyas, moving by Pashtus, there's a simple reason for it, and that is because we have to know what we're dealing with. These forbidden relations are things that the human nature is inclined towards. In other words, people want the forbidden fruit. And particularly, these are very strong desires. And we can prove this because after the Torah has given us all the warnings against these relations, the reality is, Rashi tells us we know what's going to happen. This is where people are going to fail. This is where they'll succumb. So because this is such a major challenge, therefore we need words to encourage people, we need extra warnings for people, in order to help the Jewish people to be very scrupulous about these laws and to withstand the great temptation that they present. So now that we know that this hakdama is to say this is going to be a difficult one and we really need to strengthen you, now we can appreciate why, as an introduction to that, we have the words Ani Hashem Elokeichem. That expression, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, must be part of this overarching rally to get people to align with what Hashem wants, even when it's going to be really difficult. Therefore, how does Rashi interpret Ani Hashem Elokeichem in his first? Remember, earlier we just said the second explanation that Rashi gave. But now we're going to look at the first explanation. What's the first thing Rashi says Ani Hashem Elokeichem means? Kibaltem aleihem malchusi. The Eibush is saying, you have already accepted me as your king. Me'ata kabla gezei roisoi. Now I'm asking you to accept my decrees. That's a very broad, generalized principle of Judaism, to be dedicated to Hashem's rules. So now we get the idea. The introduction to Aroyas is general messages to strengthen the Jewish people in the face of a very big challenge. And therefore, Ani Hashem Elokeichem means accept my authority and therefore my rules. Then Rashi tells us, why is this Ani Hashem Elokeichem such a general overarching message that it deserves to be at the beginning of this parasha? So Rashi initially said, well, that's because Hashem wants us to accept his authority. But Rashi then gave us a second explanation as well. Even according to his second explanation, Shani Hashem Elokecha v'asara lo yirak al kabbalas gzeiros bichlal ela b'ikar al inyan ha'arayos, where Rashi says this is not just a general message, keep the mitzvahs. This is a specific message, stand up to the challenge of forbidden relations. So Rashi says, well, even when you're talking just in the context of what's on the list over here, the forbidden relations, even then, Ani Hashem Elokeichem is a broad general message. How so? Because it speaks to multiple issues. Meaning, each word of Ani Hashem Elokeichem is giving us another either warning or encouragement to do what we should. Ani du'umi goza alechem. The word ani is reminding us who is giving these decrees, and that should strengthen us to follow them. Hashem is neman l'shal mischar. The word Hashem reminds us that Debesha will reward us if we withstand the temptation. And Elokeichem, Elokeim obviously from the Lashon Dayon, Dayon lihipora. So Elokeichem means, and if we don't chas v'shalom stand strong, then we can expect consequences. And basically what the Torah has now done is given us three key ways to be able to address a person who might struggle with the instructions of this particular parasha, even though it's going to be such a compelling a desire that people have. Well, these three perspectives will help. Know that Hashem gave these laws. Know that there's reward for withstanding it. Know that the opposite is not going to be so pleasant. Let's explain that. If we want to prevent a Jewish person from falling into the trap of a very powerful desire, the first thing we have to do is frame for that person who instructed these laws. The first thing a person has to realize is this is not a norm of society. It's not a convention of some group of legal minds. David just said that this is what you got to do. The creator and director of the world. And that should help a person realize, well, if I'm then going to follow my desires in contrast to what David wants, it's not going to end well. The only thing is, the people and the psychology of humans and the rationalizations that we use are so profound that the person will say, you know what? I don't mind that Shlomo HaMelech warned me that the end of an experience led by the Yetzer Hara is going to be bitter as can be. Right now, I'm going to enjoy myself. So, okay, later, we'll deal with what happens later. Therefore, Rashi says, no, hang on a sec, you have to remember Dain Lipora, that the Eibishto will mete out consequences, which means, it's not only that if a person contravenes what Hashem wants, they will be punished. But it's peiroin, which means you're going to pay something. What does it mean, pay? HaKadosh Baruch Hu lo oinesh hu peiroin. Anushu pereo meshevs kol anosh oisa lo bavera zovi betela kolil. Not only does a person have pleasure at one point and then punishment at a later point, but the nature of how the Eibishter constructs this is that you pay with the pleasure. In other words, it almost undoes all of the value of the pleasure. To the extent that the person is left with nothing but pain as a result of those choices. So maybe that's going to really keep a person in line, but it will raise a question. Why did the Eibishter have to make it so hard? Why did the Eibishter build inside the person such an overwhelming desire that they feel they cannot overcome? So to that, Rashi tells us, well, that's the message in the parasha, that the Eibishter gives rewards. The Eibishter's intention is the Eibishter wants us to have rewards. And that's why the Eibishter directs a challenge towards a person. And the only purpose of the Nisoyin is to overcome it so that the person can be blessed and rewarded. The harder, the tougher the particular challenge, the greater the reward that follows. That's how Rashi introduced us to the concept of Aroyas, and with that we can understand how he sums it up with Ani Hashem Elokeichem at the end of the parasha. Now we get to the end of the parasha. And what do we see? That the Torah again starts to give us all kinds of warnings against these illicit relations. Don't allow yourself to be defiled. Make sure you guard my laws. Plus, the Torah then tells us a list of punishments that would happen to people who do, in fact, engage in these relations. You don't want a situation where you get vomited out of the land of Israel, or cut off from the Eibishter. And after all of that detail, we get the final culminating pasuk, which is, you should guard those things I've given you to guard my laws. You should not do any of these horrific or despicable behaviors. Do not be defiled by them. I am Hashem, your God. So, had we not had those last words, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, we would have understood that the reason the Torah is repeating all these warnings and punishments is because it's basically to say you're going to get more consequence than you expected. We would have thought that we already have precedent, and when the Torah told us not to eat the eight creepy crawly animals, there the Torah mentioned multiple times the prohibition, lavor aleihem belavin harbe, so that if a person did one particular avera, it might count as multiple averas, like eating a crawling flying insect is multiple behavior, multiple transgressions. So that's what we would have thought. We would have thought that all the Torah is doing over here by repeating the warnings and repeating the punishments is to tell us, and if chas v'shalom, a person engages in an illicit relationship, it's going to have multiple layers of transgression. But the minute the Torah didn't only repeat warnings and punishments, it also repeated the expression, ani Hashem Elokeichem. And that's obviously not something you could say, well, it was repeated because it's got multiple values. That reinterprets that whole last segment of the parasha, that it's loy lavar harbe. It's not to tell us that there are multiple transgressions per act. Rather, the Torah is illustrating to us at this point. And Hashem Elokeichem is taking us back to how we started this section. Just like the section about inappropriate relations began with an overarching warning about how we should behave. So the Torah also rounds off the section with another overarching generalized set of warnings and encouragements. Oshmartem goimer ani Hashem Elokeichem. So you'll say, so why are you repeating this? So what new perspective are we gaining now when the Torah is again telling us this is serious business, it's going to be a very big challenge, and you have to stand up to the challenge? What are we gaining that we didn't already have at the introductory stage? Al kach mevoi, Rashi explains. The first thing Rashi says is, the Torah wants us to know that if, God forbid, somebody succumbs in these areas, Hashem, so to speak, says, I'm no longer your God. In other words, unlike the introductory paragraph, which was telling us the things that will happen, here it's telling us what would not happen or what would be taken from us if we misbehave. Im titamu, eini Elokechem. We're now focusing, so to speak, on the negative side. Claim, in other words, the difference in innovation of this particular sum up of the story of illicit relations versus the introduction, and that's why we have new information at the end of the parasha, is like this. When it said Ani Hashem Elokeichem as an introduction to the laws of illicit relations, the focus at that point was on all proactive elements or positive elements. HaKadosh Baruch Hu goyzer al b'nei Yisrael gezeiros. First of all, Hashem is giving us rules. That is proactive. And he's giving us rules that apply in two ways. Dayin li pora, rules that might create consequences if we don't obey them. V'nehem l'shalem schar, or rules that will attract reward if we follow them. But if all of that information doesn't get through to somebody, know who's making these gezeiros, know that he has rewards stacked up, know that he has the potential to give consequences. If that doesn't talk to a person, He acknowledges that David should have made the mitzvahs. And he knows he's going to pay a price for his behavior. And he's going to lose everything he gained, so to speak, from his misbehavior. But the person is still so aflame with this tremendous desire that he doesn't know how to overcome it. So the Torah adds another layer at the end of the parasha, an additional perspective that could help even this person. By recognizing that if a person defiles themselves through these relations, Hashem is, so to speak, no longer their God. The person suddenly realizes this behavior is going to interfere in my relationship with the Eibishter. Or can Irab Amuchas, that's going to talk to him. You can see it clearly. When a Jewish person hears such horrific words, I am not your God. He literally starts, it shakes him to the core. He cannot tolerate it. Like the well-known saying, that a Jew does not want to, nor is capable of disconnecting from the Eibishter. So that's the message at the end of the parasha. Know how serious this is. That's going to talk to the person who's even struggling to the extreme. Knowing that that's what the Torah wants to convey, we can understand how Rashi sees in the pshat of that three different messages. Which we'll translate in a second. What benefit do I have from you? And the person deserves to be destroyed. Because we've linked the expression Ani Hashem Elokeichem at the end of the story of the illicit relations to that same expression at the beginning. So they're both general comments on this set of averis. It's just that the first one, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, telling us all the things that come into play if people transgress, whereas the second one is telling us the things we lose if we transgress. Well, then it makes a lot of sense that if the first time we came across Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Rashi identified that Ani and Hashem Elokeichem was actually referring to three different things. Ani, I'm the one making the decrees. Hashem, I have reward for you. Elokeichem, or punishment. So therefore, it makes sense. Each word is telling us a detail of the message. Rashi says, well, the pshat then must be that at the end of the parasha, each word must represent a whole concept. And what concept? The same three concepts that were originally introduced in Ani Hashem Elokeichem at the beginning of the section, except here from the side of loss, from the side of negativity. So when we first came across the word Ani at the beginning of the section of Aroyas, there Ani meant I'm the one making these rules. So that shows relationship, that the Eibishter is focusing on the Jewish people as his nation, giving them instructions that are relevant to them. It shows a bond, it shows love. So corresponding to that, at the end of the parasha, we learn what gets undone if chas v'shalom people engage in these relations. Atem nifsolim mi'acharoi. You are nifso. What does nifso mean? It's like the engraving psolcho where Moshe Rabbeinu had to hew rocks in order to make the luchos, where you're chopping something away from where it originally belongs. So the corresponding message to the Eibishter wanting to show us a relationship by making these rules for us to live by is our rejection of those rules means we push ourselves away from that relationship. Then corresponding to at the beginning of the parasha where the word Hashem represented that the Eibishter gives rewards, the fact that the Eibishter shares a reward is an indicator of the fact that we've given the Eibishter nachas, we've given the Eibishter pleasure. And in response to the hanah, the pleasure that he gets from our avodah, he gives these rewards. So corresponding to that, on the opposite extreme is, the Eibishter says, but if you're not doing what I say, and you're following these horrific behaviors, then what possible pleasure can I have from you? And ergo, what reward could you get? of Makbil Inyan Lekeichem Dain Lipora, and corresponding to the message at the beginning of the parasha that Debisha has Chas V'Shalem consequences for a person. Again, that shows that Debisha is turning his attention towards the Jewish person in order to create a consequence for them. Made al shayches kreva v'chavivus b'nehem. That implies that there is a close and share a beloved relationship between them. Especially because we know that Torah does not believe in punishment. The things that are the punishments in Torah are intended for human improvement, for our benefit. So the opposite end of that, that's described at the end of the parasha, is that a person deserves chas v'shalom to be destroyed. In other words, to lose that relationship with Eibishter, which is our true life. So rather than have a relationship, even if that relationship includes the consequences that we suffer for our actions, the worst thing is to lose that relationship. And that would directly result chas v'shalom in a person being cut off, destroyed. Now we understand why Rashi used that unusual expression, lekach nemar, as if he's addressing a question you would have had on the words. Because that's exactly what Rashi wants to explain and emphasize. The fact that Rashi here identified three stages, three details. No longer your God. What pleasure do I have from you? And cut off psalucha, and no longer having pleasure, and that the person chas v'shalom would be destroyed. Rashi is deriving that out of those three words. That's why Rashi says lekach nemar. It's from the words that I know this particular message. Now, besides what we've already explained, Chassidus will give us a deeper appreciation of how these three words, Ani, Hashem, and Elokeichem, link to the particular messages that Rashi is deriving over here from the pasuk. First of all, Ani, Atzmusum Otsu Yisborach. We know that I is a reference to oneself, the personal pronoun, that is not limited by any names or descriptions, and therefore it is used to refer to Hashem's essence. Debish's essence is beyond relating to and certainly being directly involved in bringing the universe into existence. Like it says, the primary element of Elikus is not the fact that worlds are produced. However, it is possible to bring that essence of Debish into the world, and the only way to do that is through learning Torah and observing mitzvahs. As we well know in Chassidus, the saying of the Medrash, that the Eibishter's desire, deep desire, was to have a home in the lowest world, which means that through our performance of Torah mitzvahs, we turn this world not just into a home for the divine presence, for the Shechina, for revelation of godliness, but rather for Hashem's essence. And that's exactly like our own homes. We're in our own homes. We are ourselves. We don't have to conform. We don't have to put on a show. We don't have to present ourselves in a way that is acceptable to society. We can just be us. So the Eibishter could, so to speak, just be himself in this world. Havaya, whereas Havaya, that is the name that indicates the Eibishter bringing the world into existence at every moment. Whereas Elokeichem, that means your personalized energy, at the Koyach HaPoel Benifal, the Eibishter's animating energy within the animated reality, Madregas Elokos HaMislabeshes Benivra, otherwise known as the dimension of godliness that is invested inside the created reality. So to that, Rashi says, if we defile ourselves through these bad behaviors, then Hashem is, so to speak, not our God, and that impacts all three levels. The first thing Rashi says is, if we reject Hashem through these behaviors, then we are cut off from Hashem, or from behind Hashem. Which indicates the, so to speak, back end, the less dynamic or less revealed part of godliness. And that's Koy Hashem Elokim, which is typically represented by the name Elokim. And so therefore that represents that through a person engaging in illicit relations, they chas v'shalom lose that connection to the part of godliness that is invested in the created reality. In other words, their personal link to Hashem. Then Rashi says, beyond that, the Eibishter says, what pleasure do I derive from you? Our avoda does give Hashem tremendous pleasure, as alluded to in the expression that the Eibishter had this deep desire for a home in the lowest world. So therefore, when we make that home, we obviously create a tremendous amount of nachas and pleasure for Hashem. That is this essence pleasure that the Eibishter has from our Torah and mitzvahs. Therefore, the corollary is, if we defile ourselves by rejecting those mitzvahs, mahano yesh libchem, how can there be pleasure for the Yevishter? Not only is there no pleasure, but we actually chas v'shalom deserve the worst. In other words, not only is a person going to lose their bond with that dimension of godliness that is actually invested in the world, and a bog gam shlilim mitzadavai klolis in naisavos, but something far deeper happens. The dimension of godliness that makes everything exist is, so to speak, interrupted from this person, which means that the person can't really survive. And yet, says the Rebbe, at the end of all of it, Rashi ends with a positive message. After all is said and done, Rashi says, the Torah specifically tells us, meaning, all of these warnings that the Eibishter is giving us in the Torah are not because Chas v'Shalom the Eibishter intends that any of this should actually happen. The Eibishter's only intention is that the positive side should be fulfilled, that the Eibishter will be our God. So even though we're at the segment of this parasha, which is focusing on all the potential loss and negativity that could be generated by our poor choices, that the Eibishter says, if you do this, I'm not going to be your God. That same pasuk speaks in a positive way. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. Ki hamatoro hishi iskaim ani Hashem Elokeichem, because all of these warnings and insights are in order to preserve the fact that the Eibishter is our God. Shetekayem esano bochem, that the Eibishter should continuously have pleasure from us. Umemela ani avay lekeichem, and constantly be our God. Atzmusoy umehusay yisborch nimshach biyisrael bipnimius, which means that the Eibishter's essence should be drawn into us in a very tangible, personal way, to the extent that the Eibishter's essence actually becomes our tangible reality, what really gives us energy. It shouldn't be an abstract concept, it should be real to us, and of course it will be most real at the time of Enigla, with the coming of Mashiach now.